The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov. We're into the new month already. It's Chodesh Nisan. That's ominous for the Pesach cleaning brigade.
Mm-hmm.
But Howard, what I want to know is, are you a fan of South Park? Do you watch South Park at all?
I don't. I watched some episodes. My kids absolutely love it. I don't. Tell me why.
Well, Israel's vaccination campaign was featured on the latest episode of South Park.
Wow.
It's quite something. It's worth watching, and it's quite amusing because there is this Air Israel plane, which has got a big Magen David on the tail, looks exactly like an LL plane for all intents mm-hmm. and purposes, but of course has Air Israel on it, and it emerges out of thin air, and it distributes enough vaccines for every adult in South Park, and lots of references to Israel's vaccination campaign.
Amazing.
Someone trying to get into a club, he's not being allowed. He complains to the guard that Israel is vaccinating everybody because he was not actually allowed to get into this place. And so the guard then says to him, "Well, go to Israel." so Israel is being very much presented as the example of vaccination program. And to be fair, I think there is some justification to it. A huge risk taken, really a huge risk to go so all out and distribute the vaccinations in the way that they've done it. But I think that the risk has really paid off, is paying off.
This is incredible. It's also so refreshing that you can have that without the snide and references and negativity. So that really is amazing. But in the meantime, the number of deaths in Israel from COVID-19 has crossed the 6,000 mark over the weekend. It comes against the backdrop of reducing numbers of people infected and greater opening of the economy. So it's really a tale of so many different stories. What is the latest there?
Well, the latest is, unfortunately, we mourn the 6,000 people who have died over the past year as a result of COVID-19. We've learned a lot over the last year. Unfortunately, a lot of what we've learned has come at the expense of very, very dear lives, humans who have unfortunately succumbed to it. But in the process, we have certainly come quite a long way. And as I said before, the vaccination program is really coming into its own. It's taken a month or two for us to begin to really feel the effects of it. But I can honestly say that there is a genuine feeling of some progress being made here with life getting back to some semblance of normality, people out and about conducting their usual business. Clubs and nightclubs and bars are due to be opening next week, which is a very, very significant moment in time. When we look at the numbers, aside from the unfortunate 6,000 who have passed away, we see now that apparently there's something like 1,000 patients in Israeli hospitals. What we've learned from that is that the vaccine is not 100% effective, because out of those 1,000 people who are in hospital, something like 83 of the 1,000 are actually infected with the virus after having received both doses of the vaccine. So it shows that there is a certain element of people who will be infected by the virus in spite of having been vaccinated. Having said that, 75% of those in hospital are people who have not been vaccinated at all. And when you look at the more critical cases, then it's interesting that out of the 41 people who are connected to the ECMO machines, none of them have actually received both vaccinations, although there were 7 out of those 41 who had received the first dose of the vaccine. So a few interesting statistics, and I'm not sure whether any of this is really statistically relevant, but I know that there's a massive amount of scientific data being collected in the process as we go through this vaccination program and we track who falls ill in spite of having been vaccinated. The R number, the reproduction rate number, has been decreasing substantially In Israel, it's now below 0.8, which is, again, a really a big moment. But I think what we can anecdotally conclude is that people who have received at least one vaccine are a lot better off than people who have not been vaccinated at all. And people who have been vaccinated with both shots of the vaccine and got past that two-week period after the second dose are something like 97% sure that they are not going to suffer from a severe case of COVID-19 and 94% sure that they're not going to suffer any symptoms at all. So I think that that is a very influencing and compelling statistic that people are finding themselves in a situation of in Israel. And as a result of that, all of the schools have now returned to classroom study, albeit not all on a full-time basis. But Tel Aviv's municipality has taken the step of banning teachers from the classroom who have not been vaccinated. So that's something that's apparently now legal. If you have not been vaccinated, and I need to add, if you are not willing to take a test every 2 days to show that you're not infected with COVID-19, then you're effectively not allowed in the classroom. And that's becoming a more and more popular stance being adopted by many workplaces. And of course, there is this development of a very, very fast test that a lot of places have now taken to looking at. Apparently, that's almost ready for rolling out to allow the rapid testing kits for people who have not yet been vaccinated to be deployed so that you can still go and work or you can still enter a restaurant or a bar, even if you haven't been vaccinated, so long as you undergo this rapid test and get a negative result. And that effectively means the result needs to be pretty much on the spot. So that's now the next place that people are putting a lot of their attention into. And of course, there will be a lot of attention given to the booster vaccinations, because within the next three to four months, those people who were vaccinated will be coming around for requiring a booster. And so the whole process of boosters is still yet unknown and untested, but I'm guessing that we're going to get there sooner than we think.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I'm sure you will. We're still waiting for season one. The diplomatic spat with Jordan is reported to have prevented the Prime Minister from traveling to the UAE. This is an interesting and very strange story.
Well, it is. We spoke about it last week when, on Thursday, we mentioned that the Crown Prince Hussein had been prevented from crossing into Israel due to some sort of a disagreement over the number of people in his entourage and his security detail. And we had also spoken separately about the Prime Minister's plans to fly to the United Arab Emirates. I was under the impression, and I think the press was giving us reason to believe, that his trip to the UAE was due to have taken place later this week. But as apparently it had been planned already for the end of last week. But all of that was interrupted by this diplomatic spat with Jordan, because the Jordanians were very, very unhappy with the behavior by the Israeli government of preventing the Crown Prince from crossing into Israel and visiting the Temple Mount as he had planned to do. He was turned back and returned to Jordan. But in another set of circumstances, the Prime Minister decided that for security reasons, he was going to fly on a private plane to the UAE. And not only was he going to fly on a private plane, but he was actually going to fly on an Emirati plane rather than an Israeli plane. Now, this particular plane from the Emirates was in Jordan at the time, as luck has it, was in Jordan at the time that all of this diplomatic stuff was going on at Israel's border. And so the Jordanians decided, in response to unreasonable behavior that they attributed to the Israelis at the border to prevent the Crown Prince from crossing to the Temple Mount, they decided to prevent that plane from leaving Jordanian airspace. It was literally on the ground in Amman, and the plane was allowed to leave, as a result of which the Prime Minister's plans were completely interrupted. Well, we are told that the Prime Minister was so furious over this whole incident that he actually ordered Israeli airspace to be closed to all Jordanian planes. Now, that is a pretty serious step to take. and especially in the way that the Prime Minister did it on a unilateral basis. He just decided of his own accord and issued this instruction to the head of the Civil Aviation Authority to close Israeli airspace to any Jordanian flights. This is an agreement that was entrenched in the peace agreement between Israel and Jordan, that Israel would allow flying or overfly rights for Jordanian planes. And I believe that Israeli planes have a similar right over Jordan, although they might not be using it quite as much as the Jordanian planes are using the Israeli airspace. But apparently just 45 minutes before this particular ban was due to come into effect, it was all then rescinded. The head of the Civil Aviation Authority was very, very happy about receiving such an instruction from the Prime Minister, began to query how that order could have come, who had authorized it, what was the basis of it. So he was questioning the Prime Minister's decision. But this was apparently a knee-jerk reaction by the Prime Minister in order to retaliate against the Jordanians, effectively scuppering his plans to fly to the United Arab Emirates. So a very, very fascinating set of circumstances that transpired
could have really
become a major diplomatic incident if the airspace had been closed. But as it turns out, that was all rescinded at the very last minute, and the planes continue to fly as usual. But unfortunately, the Prime Minister's trip to the UAE did not take place last week. And as we had heard, there was some speculation about him possibly meeting the Crown Prince from Saudi Arabia, MBS, in the United Arab Emirates, which obviously now will not take place unless, of course, that trip is still going to be rescheduled between now and the elections, which are due to take place next week.
Do we know what the real story was with the Jordanian Crown Prince? Because that's a part of this that just seems odd to me. It's not consistent with how Israel is moving in terms of peace with its neighbors at the moment. It just doesn't fit.
The truth is that we know for sure that there is a great deal of sensitivity around security that is being provided, that gets provided to VIPs who cross into foreign countries. And for sure, Israel is very, very sensitive about the security cordon that might be put around Jordanian or, in fact, other Middle Eastern VIPs. And so the number of security people and how they are armed and who they are is all a matter of minute importance when arranging these visits. And from what we can gather, from what I've been able to gather, the whole incident, the border, really did circulate around that detail. Now, whether there is something behind the scenes that's being hidden away that we're not aware of, I don't know. Whether one of the members of the security team might have been, I don't know, part of the Jordanian Secret Service, and there might have been some suspicions about some attempts to spy while in Israel. I mean, all of that, I'm just making it all up as I'm going along right now, because there is absolutely no evidence to suggest that anything like that was the case. But it certainly could be a situation. And so I'm just speculating without knowing anything at all about what might have happened and why the Israelis might have been so determined to prevent the full number of people that turned up at the Allenby Bridge from being allowed to cross into Israel.
Yeah, because it's just so inconsistent with the whole trajectory. I know we don't have very much time, less than a minute, but Israel has been accused of attacking Iranian container ship in the Mediterranean. Anything more known about that?
Well, this is just like tit for tat stuff going on by the looks of things, because there was that Israeli ship that suffered a mysterious blast in its hull while it was sailing through the Gulf of Oman. And then all of a sudden, last week on Wednesday, there was this Iranian container ship that was in the Mediterranean and that was apparently damaged, mysteriously as well. An explosive object apparently hit this particular ship. No one on board was hurt. The ship itself seemed to continue along its way while being damaged, but was still able to continue. So it seems to be kind of tit for tat between Iran and Israel with these seemingly innocuous little incidents that take place from time to time. Of course, Iran calling it a terror attack, but of course it very much mirrors what went on with that Israeli ship when it was in the Gulf of Oman. So all pretty quiet now. It's all kind of just gone down a notch a little bit, but I'm sure that we're going to be hearing a lot more about that and a few more retaliation incidents that are very, very likely to come up in the next week or two or month or two. Who knows how long it will take.
Absolutely, Anthony Reich. That is where we leave it. Thank you, as always. We'll catch you tomorrow, same time, same